Chapter 10. Skin in the Game. In August 1965, I visited the Mount Hagen show for the second time. I first visited in August 1963, when I was 14. Then, my mother and I had hopped aboard a chartered DC-3, with side-saddle seating, to fly from Rabaul to Mount Hagen, for what was promoted as the weekend adventure of a lifetime. Basic accommodation was part of our Mount Hagen show package, and we were each allocated a narrow straw palliasse on the hard wooden floor of the local primary school. Mount Hagen's cooler climate was most welcome, as it was in sharp contrast to the oppressive coastal heat we experienced daily in Rabaul. In addition, Rabaul was subject to the incessant emissions from the town's active volcano, Mount Tavurvor. Whenever the wind blew from the east, we experienced unexpected random whiffs of hydrogen sulfide gas that smelled like rotten eggs. So, it was nice to have a break from the Pong. The Hagen show weekend was action-packed. Wandering the showground, we visited pavilions, saw numerous displays, and watched thousands of tribesmen, in full Sing Sing regalia, dancing to the hypnotic beat of their kundu drums. It was mesmerizing to watch the tribesmen's feathered headdresses rise and fall as they danced. All in all, it was an unforgettable experience, and one I was busting to repeat. This time, I was on holiday from boarding school in Toowoomba, Queensland. I was 16. But this time, it was very different, because we had skin in the game. Why? Because my mother's wool project, based in Kundiawa, not far from Mount Hagen, was a feature of the show, for the very first time. To get the wool project to the Mount Hagen show, the Simbu weavers, Siwi and Mbani, their spinning and weaving equipment, plus stock to sell, were loaded onto an uncovered semi-trailer, for the 100-kilometer trip, along the Highlands Highway, to Mount Hagen. My mother travelled separately, as she needed transport at the Mount Hagen end, for the duration of the show. She cautiously followed the semi-trailer, in her low-slung Karmann Gear 1500S, her pride and joy, with only 12 centimeters of clearance to the shock absorbers. This vehicle was totally unsuitable for the unsealed highland roads that were often badly affected by regular heavy rainfall. The weavers had spent months preparing for the show. From the beginning, my mother had made it very clear that to be part of the Wool Project exhibit, the weavers would be required to wear traditional dress that included bird of paradise feathers, pearl shell ornaments, and das grass. In addition, pig grease was to be smeared on their bodies to make them shine. European clothing, bought from the trade store, was absolutely forbidden. The Wool Project's allocated space within the Mount Hagen showground facility comprised a recently constructed 7-meter square hut made of bush materials that was open on three sides with a wooden platform floor. The centerpiece of the display was two looms operated by the weavers, dressed in full tribal regalia, and demonstrating their newly acquired weaving skills. It was a strangely incongruous sight. To promote the hand-woven product, behind the looms were hung an eye-catching display of hand-woven woolen blankets, stretched over lightweight wooden frames, and hung from the ceiling support poles. Behind the panels, at the rear of the stand, was a storeroom that was chock-a-block full of stock. I flew into Mount Hagen from Brisbane on Friday, the 19th of August, the day before the Mount Hagen show was due to commence. On my arrival, I found the Wool Project stand set up, and everyone involved exuding optimism at the prospect of selling all the stock and taking orders for more, thereby assuring the weavers of plenty of work on their return to Kundiawa. As this was to be the public launch of the Wool Project, the Department of Trade and Industry sent helpers from Port Moresby. In addition, the Australian Wool Board's technical manager had flown in from Sydney to lend a hand. Everyone was hyped up and ready for the experience of a lifetime, made possible through their association with the Wool Project. I was doubly excited, as my German romantic interest at the time flew into Mount Hagen from Midang that Friday afternoon. I borrowed the Karmann gear to pick him up from the airstrip, after which, we had a preview wander around the show site, before heading off to shower and change, in preparation for a romantic dinner out. But it began to rain heavily. Throughout Papua New Guinea, stormwater is managed with a network of drains, known as barrets. Measuring around 60 centimeters wide by 80 centimeters deep, they run parallel to the road. Often covered with grass, barrets were tricky to detect at night, when either walking or driving, as there was no street lighting in Mount Hagen at that time. With rain pelting down and lousy visibility, I carefully reversed the Karmann gear out of the driveway, but went a tad too far. Oh, dear. I inadvertently put both back wheels of my mother's precious car in the barret, with the boot resting on the other side. So we were well and truly stuck. What to do? From the car, I could see lights from the nearby hotel kitchen, where I hoped I could find people to help. Luckily, the cook boys responded to my request, and when there was a break in the rain, they quickly lifted the back wheels of the car out of the barret and back onto the road. After thanking the kitchen crew, we drove away to celebrate my very recent admission to the Barat Club over dinner. My boyfriend's visit was brief because he had to return to work in Midang. As a result, I didn't have a partner for the Mount Hagen show ball, though I wasn't particularly worried, as we had tickets, and weren't going to miss out on dancing to a live band, that was such a welcome change from dancing to long playing vinyl records. So, decked out in our finery, we set off to party. I can't recall seeing the Australian Governor General de Lisle and his party at the ball. Lord de Lisle had come to Mount Hagen to officially open the show. As a powerful symbol of Australian colonial authority, his presence added a degree of gravitas to the proceedings. Standing on a raised platform, he had taken the salute with aplomb, his solar topi topped with white feathers that were not nearly as colourful, or dramatic, as the sea of bird of paradise plumes below him. After he'd done the job, I assume he and his party escaped the primitive highland conditions and flew back to the comparative luxury of Government House in Port Moresby. At the ball, I met an interesting man from Canada. He was a Cree Indian, from Cutknife, Saskatchewan, who was working with the Canadian University Service overseas. He was a real live wire. The evening remains memorable, as he taught me the Cree chicken dance, much to the amusement of the cluster of onlookers, propping up the bar. The next day, slightly hungover, I headed back to the showground to lend a hand. Siwi was weaving, but I could see fellow Simbu weaver Ambani was at a loose end. I suggested we do a lap of the various displays, including the grand pavilion of our hosts, the Western Highlands District. Together we entered their pavilion, and as we did so, Ambani was curtly told he couldn't come in. I immediately arced up and retorted, "He's with me." And we kept walking. I was irritated by the attempt to exclude my Simbu friend. We returned to the Wool Project stand, just in time to be invited to lunch at the Mount Hagen Country Club by the Australian Wool Board representative. On the spur of the moment, I asked Ambani if he'd like to join us, and he agreed. Sadly, it turned out to be the most excruciatingly uncomfortable luncheon ever. The disapproval of the other diners seated nearby was palpable, deeming Ambani's presence an unexpected and inappropriate intrusion, as the Mount Hagen Country Club was a very Anglo enclave. Nothing was said, but I know Ambani felt it, and so did I. This experience was yet another sobering example of exclusion. My friend Ambani, treated as an outsider in his own country. Ambani and I arrived back at the Wool Project stand to find the stockpile of hand-woven blankets, ponchos and raw fleece floor mats continuing to sell like hotcakes. But there was a problem. Siwi, my favorite Simbu weaver, cornered me. He was very concerned, as he'd noticed a number of items were being sold twice. He could see the calamitous repercussions to come, and so could I. There would be two buyers arriving at the end of the day, to pick up one item. It appeared that the helper from Trade and Industry in Port Moresby was unaware of the system. She was taking items from the to-be-picked-up pile in the storeroom and reselling them. Siwi tried to explain, but the woman didn't speak Tok Pisin. Next, I stepped in to explain in English, but was waved away. So Siwi and I adjourned to the storeroom to lament. I was very upset, as I felt powerless to mitigate the inevitable disaster heading our way. To comfort me, Siwi said, "No can worry, sister, mama e come back past time, na by e straight m. Don't worry, sister, when your mother gets back, she will sort it out." My mother returned to find us huddled in the storeroom and wanted to know why. Through my tears, I explained our dilemma. She listened carefully before replying gruffly, in English, in her attempt to jolly me out of my distressed state. Siwi, not understanding English, picked up on her tone and reacted. He arced up, saying, "No can talk all same, lo sister belong me. Don't you speak to my sister like that." I was so shocked by Siwi's unexpectedly defensive outburst, I immediately snapped out of my funk and left my mother to conjure a solution to the double sales dilemma. By Sunday afternoon, every last item had been sold. As first-time exhibitors at the Mount Hagen show, everyone involved was thrilled with the positive response to the wool project, borne out by the long list of orders to be filled by the weavers on their return to Kundiawa. It was late afternoon by the time we had packed up, reloaded the semi-trailer, and waved the weavers farewell, before following them home in the Karmann gear. Our return trip was very slow, because the recent heavy rain had scoured out deep runoff channels, and I well remember having to get out of the car a couple of times, torch in hand, to guide the front wheels of the low-slung Karmann gear over the worst sections. We got back to Kundiawa late that evening, still basking in the warm glow of success. The wool project had taken the Mount Hagen show by storm. The total sellout, proof there was demand from both expatriates and tourists, for well-designed, quality hand-woven items. It was a most welcome boost for my mother as she steered the fledgling wool project into the future. I spent the remainder of my holidays in Kundiawa, helping with the wool project before returning to Toowoomba, to complete my last term at the Glennie Memorial School. Then, freedom. Bring it on. On reflection. Cross-cultural concern. Simbu weaver Siwi's unexpected verbal outburst, to protect me from my mother's chiding, is a reminder of the affection in which I was held by the wool project people. I'm told that a number of girl children were named for me, yet another tangible indicator of my place in their lives and their hearts. My time in New Guinea. From the beginning of our 13-year stay, I was consciously aware that I was just passing through. Whereas our hosts, the people of Papua New Guinea, had managed their land for thousands of years. This fact brought me to the conclusion that, as an uninvited guest in their culture, I had an obligation to be well behaved for the duration of my stay. But this was not a commonly held view at the time, as many of the other guests were driven by opportunistic intent, in one form or another. The objective being to extract as much as possible, with little thought of the impact their activities may have had on our hosts. I came to understand that the Simbu people have a deep and complex relationship with their land and remain largely dependent on subsistence agriculture. The New Guinea Highlands Highway. Driving the Karmann gear 1500S in the highlands was often a challenge. The roads could be extremely dangerous due to incessant rain that caused numerous washaways and occasionally impassable landslides. However, uppermost in my mind, as we negotiated the tricky bits, was my father's mantra, "You can drive a car anywhere, as long as you do it slowly." And we did. Facts. Mount Hagen is the capital of the Western Highlands Province. It's the third largest city in Papua New Guinea, located in the fertile Wagi Valley, at 1,677 meters, 5,500 feet, above sea level. The rainfall is 2,557 millimeters a year. The Wool Project was a Department of Trade and Industry initiative. The objective was to teach spinning and weaving to the local people. The Wool Project began in Kundiawa, Simbu District in 1964, and quite quickly grew to comprise 26 individual cells, scattered throughout the highlands. My mother, Gretchen Granger, ran the project single-handed, because she had the technical know-how, could design a saleable product, spoke the lingua franca, and could source suitable yarn through her network of Australian textile manufacturers. The 1965 Mount Hagen show film, titled, For the People of Papua New Guinea, The Mount Hagen Show, the film was made by the Commonwealth Film Unit. In the film, the 15th Australian Governor-General, Lord de Lisle, is shown officiating at the show opening. The Highlands Highway, also known as the O'Cook Highway, is the mainland highway in Papua New Guinea. It connects several major cities and is vital for the movement of people and goods between the populous Highlands region and the coast. For most of its length, the Highlands Highway is no more than a single carriageway two-lane road, which is often hindered by potholes and landslips. The Highlands stretch of the highway in particular is notorious for armed hold-ups and robberies committed by the local bandits, called rascals.